Chapter 50. To Teach and Learn. Some 4 hours later, the sweat running down Nynaeve's face had very little to do with unseasonable heat, and she was wondering whether it might not have been better if Nereus had gulled them, or refused to carry them beyond Boanda. Late afternoon sunlight slanted sharply through windows with mostly cracked panes. Clutching her skirts in blended irritation and unease, she tried to avoid looking at the six-eyed Sedai grouped around one of the sturdy tables near the wall. Their mouths moved silently as they conferred behind a screen of Saidar. Elaine had her chin high, her hands folded calmly at her waist, but a tightness about her eyes and the corners of her mouth spoiled her regal air. Nynaeve was not sure she wanted to know what the Aes Sedai were saying. One stunning blow after another had knocked all her high expectations into a daze. One more shock and she thought she might scream, and she did not know whether from fury or pure hysteria. Very nearly everything except their clothes was laid out on that table, from Birgitta's silver arrow in front of stout Morvryn, to the three Tarangreal before Shiriam, to the gilded coffers in front of dark-eyed Mirel. Not one of the women looked pleased. Carlinia's face might have been carved from snow. Even motherly Anaya wore a stern mask, and Beonin's look of constant wide-eyed startlement had a distinctly annoyed cast. Annoyed and something more. Sometimes Beonin made as if to touch the white cloth spread neatly over the Quendiyar seal, but her hand always stopped and retreated. Nynaeve's eyes jerked away from the cloth. She knew exactly when things had begun to go wrong. The warders who surrounded them in the woods had been proper, if cool, once she made Uno and the Shinarans put up their swords anyway. And Min's warm greetings had been all laughter and hugs. But the Aes Sedai and others in the streets, caught up in their own errands, had scurried along with hardly a glance for the party being escorted in. Salidar was quite crowded, with armed men drilling in nearly every open space. The first person aside from the warders and Min to pay any attention to them at all had been the lean brown sister they were taken to in what had once been the common room of this inn. She and Elaine had told the story they had agreed on to Phaedrin Sedai, or tried to. 5 minutes into it, they were left standing, with strict orders not to move a foot or speak a word, even to each other. 10 more minutes, staring at one another in confusion, while all around them accepted and white-clad novices, warders and servants and soldiers bustled between tables where Aes Sedai pored over papers and briskly handed out orders. And then they had been hustled before Shiriam and the others so quickly, Nynaeve did not think her shoes had touched the floor twice. That was when the grilling had begun, more suitable for captured prisoners than returning heroes. Nynaeve dabbed at the perspiration on her face, but as soon as she tucked the handkerchief back up her sleeve, her hands returned to their grip on her skirts. She and Elaine were not alone standing on the colorful silk carpet. Swan, in a plain dress of fine blue wool, might have been there by choice if Nynaeve had not known better, her face cool, utterly composed. She seemed lost in untroubled thought. Lyanna at least watched the Aes Sedai, yet she appeared equally confident. In fact, somehow more self-confident than Nynaeve remembered. The copper-skinned woman looked even more willowy, too, more supple in some fashion. Perhaps it was her scandalous dress. That pale green silk was every bit as high-necked as Swan's, but it clung to every curve of her, and the material only managed to be opaque by a thin hair. It was their faces that truly stunned Nynaeve, though. She had never expected to find either alive, and certainly never looking so very young, no more than a few years older than she, if that. They did not so much as glance at one another. In truth, she thought she detected a distinct chill between them. There was another difference about them, one that Nynaeve was just beginning to recognize. If everyone, including Min, had been ginger about it, no one made any real secret of the fact that they had been stilled. Nynaeve could feel that lack. Perhaps it was being in a room where all the other women could channel, or perhaps it was knowing they had been stilled. But for the first time she was truly conscious of the ability in Elaine and the others, and its absence from Swan and Lyanna. Something had been taken from them, cut away. It was like a wound, perhaps the worst wound a woman could suffer. Curiosity overcame her. What sort of wound would it be? What had been cut away? She might as well make use of the waiting and the irritation that larded itself through her nervousness. She reached out to Sayidar. "Did anyone grant you permission to channel here accepted?" Shiryam asked, and Nynaeve gave a start, hurriedly releasing the true source. The green-eyed Aes Sedai led the others back to their mismatched chairs, arranged on the carpet in a semicircle that had the four standing women as its focus. Some of them carried things from the table. They sat staring at Nynaeve, earlier emotions swallowed in Aes Sedai calm. None of those ageless faces acknowledged the heat by so much as a single bead of moisture. Finally, Anaya said in a gently chiding voice, "You have been very long from us, child. Whatever you have learned in the interval, you have apparently forgotten much." Blushing, Nynaeve curtsied. "Forgive me, Aes Sedai. I did not mean to overstep." She hoped they thought it was shame that heated her cheeks. She had been away from them a long time. Just one day ago, she had given the orders and people jumped when she spoke. Now she was the one expected to jump. It galled.
"You tell an interesting story."
Carlinia obviously believed little of it. The White Sister turned Brigitta's silver arrow over in long, slender hands. "And you acquired some strange possessions."
"The Panarch Amathera gave us many gifts, Aes Sedai," Elaine said. "She seemed to think we saved her throne."
Even delivered in a perfectly level voice, that speech was a walk on thin ice. Nynaeve was not the only one irritated by their fall from freedom. Carlinia's smooth face tightened.
"You come with disturbing news," Shiryam said, "and some disturbing things."
Her slightly tilted eyes wandered to the table, to the silvery idom, and returned firmly to Elaine and Nynaeve. Since learning what it was, what it was for, most of the Aes Sedai had treated it like a live red adder. Most had.
"If the thing does what these children claim," Morvryn said absently, "we need to study it. And if Elaine really believes she can make a Turang Real..."
The brown sister shook her head. Her real attention was on the flattened stone ring, all flecked and striped in red and blue and brown, that she held in one hand. The other two Turang Real lay on her broad lap.
"You say that this came from Varin Sedai? How is it this was never mentioned to us before?"
That was not directed at Nynaeve or Elaine, but at Swan. Swan frowned, but not the fierce frown Nynaeve remembered. It held a touch of diffidence, as if she knew she was speaking to her superiors, and so did her voice. That was another change Nynaeve could hardly believe.
"Varin never told me of it. I would very much like to ask her a few questions."
"And I have questions about this." Mirel's olive face darkened as she unfolded a familiar paper. Why had they ever kept that? And read aloud.
"What the bearer does is done at my order and by my authority. Obey and keep silent at my command. Swan Sanche, Watcher of the Seals, Flame of Tarvalin, the Amerlin Seat."
She crumpled the paper and its seal in her fist.
"Hardly something to be handed out to accepted."
"At the time, I did not know who I could trust," Swan said smoothly. The six Aes Sedai stared at her.
"It was within my authority then."
The six Aes Sedai did not blink. Her voice took on a thread of exasperated pleading.
"You cannot call me to account for doing what I had to do when I had a perfect right to do it. When the boat's sinking, you plug the hole with what you can find."
"And why did you not tell us?" Shiryam asked quietly, but with a hint of steel. As mistress of novices, she had never raised her voice, though sometimes you wished she would.
"Three accepted. Accepted! Sent out of the tower, chasing 13 full sisters of the Black Aja. Do you use babies to plug the hole in your boat, Swan?" "We are hardly babies," Nynaeve told her heatedly. "Several of those 13 are dead, and we thwarted their plans twice. In Tyr, we..."
Carlinia cut her off like an icy knife.
"You have told us all about Tyr, child, and Tanchico, and defeating Mogadine."
Her mouth twisted wryly. She had already said that Nynaeve had been a fool to come within a mile of one of the Forsaken, that she was lucky to have escaped with her life. That Carlinia did not know how right she was, they certainly had not told everything, only made Nynaeve's stomach clench tighter.
"You are children, and lucky if we decide not to spank you. Now hold your peace until you are called on to speak."
Nynaeve flushed heavily, hoping they took it for embarrassment, and held her peace. Shiriam had never taken her eyes from Swan.
"Well, why have you never mentioned sending 3 children out to hunt lions?"
Swan drew a deep breath, but folded her hands and ducked her head penitently. "There seemed no point, Aes Sedai, with so much else of importance. I have held nothing back when there was the faintest reason for telling. Every scrap I knew of the Black Adja I told. I've not known where these 2 were or what they were up to for some time. The important thing is that they are here now, and with those 3 Tarangreal. You must realize what it means to have access to Elida's study, to her papers, if only in bits. You'd never have known that she knows where you are until it was too late except for that."
"We realize that," Anaya said, eyeing Morvryn, who was still frowning at the ring. "It is just that perhaps the means of it takes us a little by surprise."
"Tell Iranriod," Mirel breathed. "Why, it has become no more than a matter for scholarly discussion in the tower, almost a legend. And Aiel dreamwalkers. Who would have imagined that Aiel wise ones could channel, much less this?"
Nynaeve wished they had been able to keep that secret, like Birgitta's true identity and a few other things they had managed to hold back. But it was difficult to keep things from slipping out when you were being questioned by women who could bore holes in stone with a look when they wanted. Well, she supposed she should be glad they had managed to hang on to what they had. Once Tel Iranriod had been mentioned, and that they had entered it, a mouse would have treed cats before these women stopped asking questions. Lyanna took a half step forward, not looking at Swan. "The important thing is that with these Tarangreal you can talk to Egwene, and through her to Moiraine. Between them you can not only keep an eye on Randall Thor, you should be able to influence him even in Cairhien."
"Where he went from the Aiel Waste," Swan said, "where I predicted he would be."
If her eyes and words were directed at the Aes Sedai, her astringent tone was plainly meant for Lyanna, who grunted. Much good that did. 2 Aes Sedai sent off to the waste chasing ducks. Oh, yes. There was very definitely a chill there.
"Enough, children," Anaya said, very much as if they really were children, and she a mother, used to their petty squabbles. She eyed the other Aes Sedai meaningfully. "It will be a very good thing to be able to talk with Egwene."
"If these work as claimed," Morvryn said, bouncing the ring on one palm and fingering the other Tarangreal on her lap. The woman would not believe the sky was blue without proof. Shiriam nodded. "Yes, that will be your first duty, Elaine, Nynaeve. You will have a chance to teach Aes Sedai, showing us how to use them." Nynaeve curtsied, baring her teeth. They could take it for a smile if they chose. "Teach them? Yes, and never get near the ring or the others again after." Elaine's curtsy was even stiffer, her face a cool mask. Her eyes rolled toward that fool Idom almost longingly. "The letters of rites will be useful," Carlinia said. With all that white Aja coolness and logic, testiness still showed in the way she clipped her words. "Gareth Bryn always wants more gold than we have, but with those we may almost be able to satisfy him."
"Yes," Shiriam said. "And we must take most of the coin, too. There are more mouths to feed and more backs to clothe every day, here and elsewhere."
Elaine gave a gracious nod, just as if they would not take the money, whatever she said, but Nynaeve simply waited. Gold and letters of rights and even Turangrial were only a part.
"For the rest," Shiriam went on, "we are agreed that you left the tower by command, however erroneous it was, and you cannot be held to account for it. Now that you are safely back with us, you will resume your studies."
Nynaeve only breathed out slowly. It was no more than she had expected since the questioning began. Not that she liked it, but for once no one was going to be able to accuse her of having a temper. Not when in all probability it would do no good. Elaine, though, burst out with a sharp, "But..." just that before Shiriam cut in just as sharply. "You will resume your studies. You are both very strong, but you are not Aes Sedai yet." Those green eyes held them until she was sure they had taken it, and then she spoke again, her voice milder. Milder, but still firm. "You are returned to us, and if Salidar is not the White Tower, you may still consider it so. From what you have told us in the last hour, there is considerably more you have yet to tell." Nynaeve's breath caught, but Shiriam's eyes slid back to the Eidam. "A pity you did not bring the Shanshan woman with you. That you really should have done." For some reason, Elaine blushed bright red and looked angry at the same time. For herself, Nynaeve was only relieved it was the Shanshan the woman meant. "But accepted cannot be called to account for not thinking as Aes Sedai," Shiriam went on. "Swan and Lyanna will have many questions for you. You will cooperate with them and answer to the best of your abilities. I trust I do not have to remind you not to take advantage of their present condition. Some accepted and even some novices have thought to lay blame for events and even take punishments into their own hands." That mild tone became cold steel. "Those young women are now extremely sorry for themselves. Need I say more?" Nynaeve was no more hasty than Elaine to let her know she did not, which was to say they both almost stammered in their haste to get it out. Nynaeve had not thought of assigning blame. To her thinking, Aes Sedai were all to blame, but she did not want Shiriam angry with her. Realizing that fact drove the truth home bitterly. The days of freedom certainly were gone. "Good. Now you may take the jewels the Panarch gave you and the arrow. When there is time, you must tell me why she made you a gift like that, and go. One of the other accepted will find you places to sleep. Proper dresses may be harder to come by, but they will be found. I expect you to put your adventures behind you and fit smoothly back into your proper place." Plain although unspoken was the promise that if they did not fit back in smoothly, they would be smoothed until they did. Shiriam gave a satisfied nod when she saw they understood. Beonin had not said a word since the shield of Sidar was lowered, but as Nynaeve and Elaine made their curtsies, the Grey Sister rose and strode to the table where their things were laid out. "And what of this?" she demanded in heavy Tarabonar accents, whipping aside the white cloth that covered the seal on the Dark One's prison. For a change, her large blue-gray eyes looked more angry than startled. "Are there to be no more questions about this? Do you all mean to ignore it?" The black and white disc lay there next to the wash leather purse in a dozen or more pieces, fitted back together as neatly as they could be. "It was whole when we put it in the purse." Nynaeve paused to work moisture back into her mouth. As much as her eyes had avoided the covering cloth before, they could not leave the seal now. Lyanna had smirked when she saw the red dress unwrapped from around its cargo and said, no, she would not run away from it, even in her head. "Why should we have thought to take special care? It's Quendiyar." "We didn't look at it," Elaine said breathlessly, "or touch it more than we had to. It felt filthy, evil." It no longer did. Carlinia had made them each hold a piece, demanding to know what evil feeling they were talking about. They had said the same things before more than once, and no one paid them any heed now. Shiriam rose and went to stand beside the honey-haired Grey. We are ignoring nothing, Beonin. Asking these girls more questions will do no good. They have told us what they know.
More questions are always good, Morvryn said, but she had stopped fiddling with the Turangrial to stare at the broken seal as hard as anyone else.
It might be Quendiar. She and Beonin had each tested it and said it was, yet she had broken one fragment with her hands.
How many of the seven still hold?
Mirel asked softly, as if speaking to herself.
How long until the Dark One breaks free, and the last battle comes?
Every Aes Sedai did some of almost everything, according to her talents and inclinations, yet each Aja had its own reason for being. Greens, who called themselves the Battle Aja, held themselves ready to face new dreadlords in the last battle. There was almost a hint of eagerness in Mirel's voice.
Three, Anaya said unsteadily. Three still hold. If we know everything. Let us pray that we do. Let us pray three are enough.
Let us pray those three are stronger than this one, Morvryn muttered. Quendiar cannot be broken so. Not and be Quendiar. It cannot.
We will discuss this in due course, Shiriam said. After more immediate matters that we can do something about.
Taking the cloth from Beonin, she covered the broken seal once more.
Swan, Lyanna, we have reached a decision concerning...
She stopped short as she turned and saw Elaine and Nynaeve.
Were you not told to go?
For all her outward calm, the turmoil inside showed in her forgetting their presence. Nynaeve was more than ready to drop another curtsy, blurt a hurried "By your leave, Aes Sedai," and scurry for the door. Without moving a muscle, the Aes Sedai and Swan and Lyanna watched her and Elaine go. Nynaeve felt their eyes like a shove. Elaine stepped not a whit more slowly, for all she cast another look at the Eidam. Once Nynaeve had the door closed and could lean back against its unpainted wood, clutching the gilded coffer to her breasts, she took her first comfortable breath, or so it seemed, since entering the old stone inn. She did not want to think about the broken seal. Another broken seal. She would not. Those women could shear sheep with their eyes. She could almost look forward to watching their first meeting with the wise ones, if she was not likely to be squarely in the middle. It had been more than difficult when she first went to the tower, learning to do as she was told by others, to bend her neck. After long months when she gave the orders, well, once she had consulted Elaine, usually, she did not know how she was going to learn to pull wool and scratch gravel all over again. The common room, with its ill-patched plaster ceiling and cold stone fireplaces near collapsing, was the same beehive it had been when she first entered. No one gave her more than a glance now, and she gave them less. A small crowd awaited her and Elaine. Tom and Julin, on a rough bench against the flaking plaster wall, had their heads together with Uno, who was squatting in front of them, long sword hilt rising over his shoulder. Arena and Nicola, both staring amazed at everything and trying not to show it, occupied another bench with Marigan, who was watching Birgitta attempt to amuse Jarl and Sieve by awkwardly juggling three of Tom's colored wooden balls. Kneeling behind the boys, Min was tickling them, whispering in their ears, but they only clung to each other, silently staring with those two big eyes. Only two others in the entire room were not scurrying about. Two of Mirel's three warders happened to be leaning against the wall in conversation a few paces beyond the benches, just this side of the door back to the kitchen corridor. Croy Macon, a yellow-haired young splinter of stone from Andor with a fine profile, and Avar Hachami, hawk-nosed and square-chinned, and a thick, gray-streaked mustache like down-curved horns. No one would call Hachami handsome even before his dark-eyed stare made them swallow. They were not looking at Uno or Tom or anyone else, of course. It was only happenstance that they alone had nothing to do and had chosen just that spot to do it. Of course. Birgitta dropped one of the balls when she saw Nynaeve and Elaine. "What did you tell them?" she asked quietly,
barely glancing at the silver arrow in Elaine's hand. The quiver hung at her belt, but her bow was propped against the wall. Moving closer, Nynaeve carefully did not look toward Makin and Hachami. Just as carefully, she lowered her voice and was sparing with emphasis. "We told them everything they asked for." Elaine touched Brigitte's arm. "They know you are a good friend who has helped us. You are welcome to stay here, just the same as Arena and Nicola and Marigan." Only when some of Brigitte's tension melted did Nynaeve realize how much had been there. The blue-eyed woman scooped up the fallen yellow ball and smoothly tossed all three back to Tom, who snagged them with one hand and made them vanish in a single motion. She wore the faintest of relieved grins.
"I can't tell you how glad I am to see the pair of you," Min said for at least the fourth or fifth time.
Her hair was longer than it had been, though still a dark cap around her head, and she looked different in some other way that Nynaeve could not put a finger on. Surprisingly, freshly embroidered flowers climbed the lapels of her coat. She had always worn quite plain clothes before. "A friendly face is rare around here." Her eyes flickered just a fraction toward the two warders. "We have to settle down alone and have a long talk. I can't wait to hear what you've been up to since you left Tar Valon." Or to tell what she had been up to as well, else Nynaeve missed her guess.
"I would like very much to talk to you, too," Elaine said, quite seriously.
Min looked at her, then sighed and nodded, not as eager as a moment before. Tom and Julin and Uno came up behind Brigitte and Min, their faces set in that way men took on when they meant to say things they thought a woman might not like to hear. Before they could open their mouths, though, a curly-haired woman in an accepted's dress pushed between Julin and Uno, glowering at them, and planted herself in front of Nynaeve. Faelaine's dress, with its seven bands of color at the hem for the Ajahs, was not quite as white as it should have been, and her dark face wore a scowl. "I'm surprised to see you here, Wilder. I thought you'd gone running back to your village, and our fine daughter heir to her mother."
"Are you still souring milk for a hobby, Faelaine?"
Elaine asked. Nynaeve kept her face pleasant. Just barely. Twice in the tower, Faelaine had been set to teach her something. To put her in her place was her own opinion. Even when teacher and pupil were both accepted, the teacher had the status of Aes Sedai so long as the lesson lasted, and Faelaine took full advantage. The curly-haired woman had spent 8 years as a novice and 5 more as accepted. She was not best pleased that Nynaeve had never had to be a novice at all, or that Elaine had worn pure white for less than a year. 2 lessons from Faelaine and 2 trips to Shiriam's study for Nynaeve, for stubbornness, temper, a list as long as her arm. She made her voice light.
"I heard Swan and Liana have been badly treated by someone. I think Shiriam means to make an example to end it once and for all."
She kept her eyes steady on the other woman's, and Faelaine's widened in alarm.
"I've done nothing since Shiriam..."
Faelaine's mouth snapped shut, and her face colored heavily. Min hid her mouth behind her hand, and Faelaine jerked her head around, studying the other women, from Brigitte to Marigan. She motioned brusquely to Nicola and Arena.
"You two will do, I suppose. Come with me. Now. No dawdling."
They rose slowly, Arena staring warily and Nicola with fingers fretting at the waist of her dress. Elaine stepped between them and Faelaine before Nynaeve could, chin high and eyes imperious blue ice.
"What do you want with them?"
"I am obeying Shiriam Sedai's orders," Faelaine replied. "I myself think they are too old for first testing, but I obey orders. A sister accompanies Lord Bryn's recruiting parties, testing women even as old as Nynaeve." Her sudden smile could have come from a viper.
"Shall I inform Shiriam Sedai that you disapprove, Elaine? Shall I tell her you won't let your retainers be tested?"
Elaine's chin came down somewhat during that, but of course she could not simply back down. She needed a diversion. Nynaeve touched Faelaine's shoulder.
Have they found many?
In spite of herself, the woman's head turned, and when she glanced back, Elaine was soothing Irena and Nicola, explaining that they would not be hurt or forced into anything. Nynaeve would not have gone so far. When Aes Sedai found someone with the spark born in her, like Elaine or Egwene, someone who would channel eventually, whether she wanted to or not, they were quite open about bundling her into training, whatever her wishes. They seemed more lenient about those who could be trained, but would never touch Saidar without it, and about wilders, those who had survived the 1 in 4 chance of teaching themselves, usually without knowing what they had done, and often blocked in some way, as Nynaeve was. Supposedly they could choose to come or stay. Nynaeve had chosen to enter the tower, but she suspected that if she had not, she still would have gone, perhaps even tied hand and foot. Aes Sedai gave women who had the smallest chance of joining them as much choice as a lamb on a feast day.
3, Faelaine said after a moment. All that effort, and they've found 3. 1 a wilder.
She truly did not like wilders.
I do not know why they are so eager to find new novices. The novices we have can't be raised accepted until we regain the tower. It is all Swan Sanche's fault, her and Liana.
A muscle in her cheek twitched, as if she realized that remark might be thought to harass the former Amerlin and Keeper, and she seized Irena and Nicola each by an arm.
Come along. I obey orders, and if you're to be tested, you'll be tested. Waste of time or no waste of time.
A nasty woman, Min murmured, squinting after Faelaine as she hurried the others across the common room.
You'd think, if there was any justice, she would have an unpleasant future ahead of her.
Nynaeve wanted to ask what Min had seen in her viewing of the curly-haired accepted. There were 100 questions she wanted to ask her, but Tom and the other 2 men planted themselves firmly in front of her and Elaine, Juelin and Uno to either side, so among the 3 they could see in every direction. Birgitta was leading Jarl and Sieve to their mother, keeping her out of it. Min knew what the men were up to, too, by the rueful look she gave them. She seemed about to say something, but in the end she only shrugged and joined Birgitta. By Tom's face he could have been about to comment on the weather, or ask what was for supper. Nothing important.
This place is full of dangerous fools and dreamers. They think they can depose Elida. That's why Gareth Bryn is here, to raise an army for them.
Julin's grin almost split his dark face in 2.
Not fools, mad women and madmen. I don't care if Elida was there the day Loghain was born. They're mad to think they can pull down an Amerlin sitting in the White Tower from here. We could reach Cairhien in a month, maybe. Rhaegan and a few of the others already have horses marked out for borrowing.
Uno was grinning, too. It looked incredibly incongruous with that glaring red eye on his patch.
The guards are set to watch for people coming in, not going out. We can lose them in the forest. It'll be dark soon. They'll never find us.
The women's donning their great serpent rings back by the river had had a remarkable effect on his language, though he did seem to make up for it when he thought they could not hear. Nynaeve looked at Elaine, who shook her head slightly. Elaine would put up with anything to be Aes Sedai. And herself? Small chance that they could influence these Aes Sedai to support Rand if they had decided to try controlling him instead. Make that no chance. She might as well be realistic. And yet there was healing. She would learn nothing of it in Cairhien. But here, not 10 paces from her, Thurva Maresis, a slender yellow with a long nose, was methodically ticking off points on a parchment with her pen. A bald-headed warder with a black beard stood conferring with Nisau Dachen near the door, head and shoulders above her despite being no taller than average, while Dagdara Finchi, as wide as any man in the room and taller than most, addressed a group of novices in front of one of the unlit fireplaces, briskly sending them off one by one on errands. Nisau and Dagdara were yellow Aja too. It was said that Dagdara, her graying hair marking considerable age on an Aes Sedai, knew more of healing than any 2 others.
It was not as if Nynaeve would be able to do anything useful if she did go to Rand. Just watch him go mad. If she could progress with healing, maybe she could find a way to hold that madness off. There was too much that Aes Sedai were willing to call hopeless and let go at that to suit her. All of that flashed through her head in the time it took to look at Elaine and turn back to the men. We will be staying here. Uno, if you and the others want to go to Rand, you are free to, as far as I'm concerned. I fear I no longer have money to help you. The gold the Aes Sedai had taken was needed, just as they said, but she could not help wincing at the few silvers left in her purse. These men had followed her, and Elaine, of course, for all the wrong reasons, but that did not lessen her responsibility for them. Their loyalties were to Rand. They had no reason to enter a struggle for the White Tower. With a glance at the gilded coffer, she added reluctantly, "But I do have some things you can sell along the way." "You must go too, Tom," Elaine said. "And you, Julin. There's no point in remaining. We have no need of you now, but Rand will." She tried to press her casket of jewels into Tom's hands, but he refused to take it. The three men exchanged looks in that irritating way they had, Uno going so far as to roll his eye. Nynaeve thought she heard Julin mutter something under his breath about having said they would be stubborn. "Perhaps in a few days," Tom said. "A few days," Julin agreed. Uno nodded. "I could do with a little rest if I'm going to be running from warders halfway to Cairhien." Nynaeve gave them her flattest stare and deliberately tugged her braid. Elaine had her chin as high as it had ever been, her blue eyes haughty enough to chip ice. Tom and the others surely knew the signs by now. Their nonsense was not going to be allowed. "If you think you are still following Randall Thor's orders to look after us," Elaine began in frosty tones, at the same time that Nynaeve said heatedly, "You promised to do as you were told, and I mean to see..."
"Nothing like that,"
Tom broke in, brushing back a strand of Elaine's hair with a gnarled finger.
"Nothing at all like. Can't an old man with a limp want a little rest?"
"To tell the truth," Julin said, "I am just staying because Tom owes me money. Dice."
"Do you expect us to steal 20 horses from warders like falling out of bed?"
Uno growled. He seemed to have forgotten just offering to do exactly that. Elaine stared, at a loss for words, and Nynaeve was having difficulty finding them herself. How far they had fallen. Not so much as a shifted foot in the three of them. The trouble was that she was torn. She had determined to send them away. She had, and not because she didn't want them around, watching her curtsy and scrape right and left. Not at all. Yet with almost nothing in Salidar as she had expected, she had to admit, however reluctantly, that it would be comforting to know she and Elaine had more than Birgitta to depend on. Not that she would take up the offer of escape, of course, if that was what it should be called, not under any circumstances. Their presence would just be comforting. Certainly not that she would let them know that. She would not have to, since they were going, whatever they thought. Rand could find use for them, very probably, and they would only get in the way here. Except... The unpainted door opened, and Swan stalked out, followed by Lyanna. They stared at each other coldly before Lyanna sniffed and glided away, startlingly sinuous as she vanished around Croy and Eivor into the corridor that led to the kitchens. Nynaeve frowned slightly. In the midst of all that iciness, there had been one instant, a brief flicker she almost missed, with it right in front of her. Swan swung toward her, then abruptly stopped short, her face going blank. Someone else had joined the small gathering. Gareth Bryn, dented breastplate buckled over his plain buff-colored coat and steel-backed gauntlets tucked behind his sword belt, radiated command. Mostly gray hair and a bluff face gave him the appearance of a man who had seen everything, endured everything, a man who could endure anything. Elaine smiled, nodding graciously, a far cry from her astonished stares, coming into Salidar, when she had first recognized him the length of the street.
"I will not say it is entirely good to see you, Lord Gareth. I have heard of some difficulty between Mother and you, but I am sure it can be mended. You know Mother is hasty sometimes. She will come round and ask you back to your proper place in Camelin. You may be certain of it."
"Done is done, Elaine." Ignoring her astonishment, Nynaeve doubted anyone who knew Elaine's rank had ever been so curt to her. He turned to Uno.
"Have you thought on what I said? Shinarans are the finest heavy cavalry in the world, and I have lads who are just right for proper training."
Uno frowned, his one eye sliding to Elaine and Nynaeve. Slowly he nodded.
"I've nothing better to do. I'll ask the others."
Bryn clapped him on the shoulder.
"Well enough. And you, Tom Merrillan?"
Tom had half turned away at the other man's approach, knuckling his mustaches and staring at the floor as if to obscure his face. Now he met Bryn's level stare with one of his own.
"I once knew a fellow with a name much like yours," Bryn said. "A skilled player of a certain game." "I once knew a fellow who looked much like you," Tom replied. "He tried hard to put me in chains. I think he'd have cut my head off if he ever laid hands on me." "A long time ago, that would be. Men do strange things for women sometimes."
Bryn glanced at Swan and shook his head.
"Will you join me for a game of stones, Master Merrillan? I sometimes find myself wishing for a man who knows the game well, the way it's played in lofty circles."
Tom's bushy white eyebrows drew down almost as far as Uno's had, but he never took his eyes from Bryn.
"I might play a game or two," he said finally, "once I know the stakes. As long as you understand I don't intend to spend the rest of my life playing stones with you. I don't like staying too long in one place anymore. My feet itch sometimes."
"So long as they don't itch in the middle of a crucial game," Bryn told him dryly. "The two of you come with me, and don't expect much sleep. Around here everything needs doing yesterday except what should have been done last week." Pausing, he looked at Swan again. "My shirts came back only half clean today." With that, he was leading Tom and Uno off. Swan glared at his back, then shifted her frown to Min, and Min grimaced and darted off the way Lyanna had gone. Nynaeve did not understand that last exchange at all, and the nerve of those men, thinking they could talk over her head, or under her nose, or whatever, without her understanding every word. Enough of them, anyway.
"A good thing he has no need for a thief-catcher," Juelin said, eyeing Swan sideways and plainly uncomfortable.
He had not gotten over the shock of learning her name. Nynaeve was not sure he had taken in about her being stilled and no longer the Ammerlin's seat. He certainly shifted his feet for her.
"This way I can sit and talk. I've seen a lot of fellows who look like they might unwind over a mug of ale."
"He practically ignored me," Elaine said incredulously. "I don't care what the trouble is between him and Mother. He has no right. Well, I will tend to Lord Gareth Bryn later. I have to talk to Min, Nynaeve."
Nynaeve started to follow as Elaine hurried toward that hall to the kitchens. Min would give straight answers. But Swan caught her arm in an iron grip. The Swan Sanche, who had meekly ducked her head before those Aes Sedai, was gone. No one here wore the shawl. Her voice never rose. It did not need to. She fixed Juelin with a stare that had him almost jumping out of his skin.
"You watch what questions you ask, thief-catcher, or you'll gut yourself for market."
Those cold blue eyes shifted to Birgitta and Marigan. Marigan's mouth twisted as if she tasted something bad, and even Birgitta blinked. "You two,
Find an accepted named Theodrin, and ask her about somewhere to sleep tonight. Those children look as if they should be in bed already. Well, move your feet.
Before they had stirred a step, and Birgitta was moving as quickly as Marigan, maybe quicker, she rounded on Nynaeve.
You, I have questions for. You were told to cooperate, and I suggest you do if you know what's good for you.
It was like being caught in a high wind. Before Nynaeve knew it, Swan was hurrying her up rickety steps with a railing cobbled together from unpainted wood, hustling her down a rough-floored corridor to a tiny room with two cramped beds built into the wall, one above the other. Swan took the only stool, motioning her to sit on the lower bed. Nynaeve chose to stand, if only to show she was not going to be pushed. There was not much else in the room. A washstand with a brick propping up one leg held a chipped pitcher and basin. A few dresses hung from pegs, and what appeared to be a pallet lay rolled up in one corner. Nynaeve had fallen far in the space of a day, but Swan had fallen farther than she could imagine. She did not think she would have too much trouble with the woman, even if Swan did still have the same eyes. Swan sniffed.
Suit yourself, then, girl. The ring. It doesn't require channeling.
No. You heard me tell Shiriam anyone can use it. A woman who can't channel. A man. Possibly a man. Turangrial that did not need the power usually worked for men or women. For any woman, yes.
Then you are going to teach me to use it.
Nynaeve raised one eyebrow. This might be a lever to get what she wanted. If not, she had another. Maybe.
Do they know about this? All the talk was of showing them how it works. You were never mentioned.
They don't know. Swan did not appear shaken at all. She even smiled, and not pleasantly.
And they won't. Else they'll learn you and Elaine have been posing as full sisters since you left Tar Valon. Moiraine might be letting Egwene get away with it. If she hasn't tried it too, I don't know a bar knot from a running hitch. But Shiriam? Carlinia? They'll have you squealing like a spawning grunter before they're done. Long before.
That's ridiculous. Nynaeve realized she was sitting on the edge of the bed. She did not remember sitting down. Tom and Juulin would hold their tongues. No one else knew. She had to talk to Elaine.
We haven't pretended anything of the sort.
Don't lie to me, girl. If I needed confirmation, your eyes gave it. Your stomach is turning somersaults, isn't it?
It most certainly was.
Of course not. If I teach you anything, it's because I want to. She was not going to let this woman bully her. The last vestige of pity winked out. If I do, I want something in return. To study you and Lyanna. I want to know if Stilling can be healed.
It can't, Swan said flatly.
Now, anything short of death should be.
Should be isn't is, girl. Lyanna and I were promised we would be left alone. Speak to Faelaine or Emara if you want to know what happens to anyone who molests us. They weren't the first or the worst, but they cried the longest.
Her other lever, near panic, had driven it right out of her head, if it existed. One glance.
What would Shiriam say if she knew you and Lyanna weren't ready to tear out each other's hair at all?
Swan just looked at her.
They think you're tamed, don't they? The more you snap at anybody who can't snap back, the more they take it for proof when you leap to obey every time an Aes Sedai coughs. Was a little cringing all it took to make them forget the two of you had worked hand in hand for years? Or did you convince them Stilling had changed everything about you, not just your face? When they find out you've been scheming behind their backs, manipulating them, you'll howl louder than any grunter. Whatever that is.
Not so much as a blink. Swan was not going to loose her temper and let any admissions slip out. Yet there had been something in that brief look. Nynaeve was sure of it.
I want to study you and Lyanna whenever I want. And Loghain.
Perhaps she could learn something there as well. Men were different. It would be like looking at the problem from another angle.
Not that she would heal him, even if she discovered how. Rand's channeling was necessary. She was not about to loose another man on the world who could wield the power. If not, then you can forget about the ring and Telaronriod. What was Swan after there? Probably just to revisit something that at least seemed like being Aes Sedai. Nynaeve stamped firmly on momentarily rekindled pity. And if you make any claims about us pretending to be Aes Sedai, then I'll have no choice but to tell about you and Lyanna. Elaine and I might be uncomfortable until the truth comes out, but it will. And the truth will make you weep as long as Faelaine and Imara together.
Silence stretched. How did the other woman manage to look so cool?
Nynaeve had always thought it had to do with being Aes Sedai. Her lips felt dry, the only part of her that did. If she was wrong, if Swan was willing to put it to the test, she knew who would be weeping. Finally, Swan muttered, "I hope Moiraine has managed to keep Egwene's backbone more supple than this." Nynaeve did not understand, but she hardly had time to consider it. The next instant, the other woman was leaning forward, hand outstretched. "You keep my secrets, and I will keep yours. Teach me the ring, and you can study stilling and gentling to your heart's content." Nynaeve barely managed to hold in a relieved sigh as she clasped the offered hand. She had done it. For the first time in what seemed forever, someone had tried to bully her and failed. She almost felt ready to face Mogadyn. Almost. Elaine caught up with Min just outside the back door of the inn and fell in beside her. Min had what looked like two or three white shirts wadded under one arm. The sun sat on the treetops, and in the fading light the stable yard had the soft look of dirt not long turned, with a huge stump that might have belonged to an oak right in the middle. The thatch-roofed stone stable had no doors, allowing a good look at men moving among filled stalls. Surprisingly, Lyanna was talking to a large man on the edge of the stable's shadow. Roughly dressed, he looked a blacksmith, or a brawler. What was surprising was how close Lyanna stood, head tilted as she stared up at him. And then she actually patted his cheek before turning away and hurrying back to the inn. The big man stared after her a moment, then melted into the shadows. "Don't ask me what she's up to," Min said. "Strange people come to see Swan or her, and some of the men she... well, you saw." Elaine did not really care what Lyanna did, but now that she had Min alone, she did not know how to bring up what she wanted. "What are you doing?" "Laundry," Min muttered, shifting the shirts irritably. "I can't tell you how good it is to see Swan the mouse for once. She doesn't know whether the eagle is going to eat her or make her a pet, but she has the same choice she gives everybody else. None." Elaine quickened her pace to keep up as they crossed the stable yard. Whatever that was about, it gave no opening. "Did you know what Tom was going to suggest? We are staying." "I told them you would. Not a viewing." Min's step slowed again as they started between the stable and a crumbling stone wall, down a dim alley of brush stubble and trampled weeds. "I just didn't think you would give up the chance to study again. You were always eager. Nynaeve, too, even if she won't admit it. I wish I'd been wrong. I'd go with you. At least I..." She muttered something furious sounding under her breath. "Those three you brought with you are trouble, and that is a viewing." There it was, the crack she needed. But instead of asking what she had intended, she said, "You mean Marigan and Nicola and Arena? How can they be trouble?" Only a fool passed over what Min saw. "I don't know exactly. I only caught glimpses of Aura, and just out of the corner of my eye. Never when I was looking right at them, where I might have made something out. There aren't many who have auras all the time, you know. Trouble. Maybe they'll carry tales. Were you up to anything you wouldn't want the Aes Sedai to know about?" "Certainly not," Elaine said briskly. Min looked at her sideways, and she added, "Well, nothing we didn't have to do. They can't possibly know about it anyway." This was not taking her where she wanted to go.
Drawing a deep breath, she leaped off the cliff.
Min, you had a viewing about Rand and me, didn't you?
She went two steps before she realized the other woman had stopped.
Yes. It was a wary word.
You saw that we were going to fall in love.
Not exactly. I saw you'd fall in love with him. I don't know what he feels for you, only that he's tied to you some way.
Elaine's mouth tightened.
That was about what she had expected, but not what she wanted to hear.
Wish and want trip the feet, but is makes the path smoother.
That was what Leany said. You had to deal with what was, not what you wished was.
And you saw there would be someone else. Someone I'd have to share him with.
Two,
Min said hoarsely.
Two others. And I'm one.
Mouth already open for the next question. For a moment, Elaine could only stare.
You, she got out at last.
Min bristled.
Yes, me. Do you think I can't fall in love? I didn't want to, but I did, and that's that.
She stalked past Elaine down the alleyway, and this time Elaine was slower to catch up.
It certainly explained a few things. How nervously Min had always sidestepped talking about it. The embroidery on her lapels. And unless she was imagining it, Min was wearing rouge, too.
How do I feel about it? She wondered. She could not sort it out. Who is the third? She asked quietly.
I don't know, Min mumbled. Only that she has a temper. Not Nynaeve, thank the light.
She gave a weak laugh.
I don't think I could have survived that.
Once more she gave Elaine a cautious sidelong look.
What does this mean between you and me?
I like you. I never had a sister, but sometimes I feel like you. I want to be your friend, Elaine, and I won't stop liking you, whatever happens, but I can't stop loving him.
I don't very much like the idea of having to share a man, Elaine said stiffly.
That was certainly an understatement.
Me neither. Only, Elaine, it shames me to admit it, but I will take him any way I can get him. Not that either of us has much choice. Light, he's scrambled my whole life. Just thinking about him scrambles my brains.
Min sounded as if she did not know whether to laugh or cry. Elaine exhaled slowly. Not Min's fault. Was it better that it was Min rather than, say, Berylaine or somebody else she could not abide?
Taviren, she said. He bends the world around him. We are chips caught in a whirlpool.
But I seem to recall you and me and DeGuane saying we'd never let a man come between us being friends. We will work it out somehow, Min. And when we find out who the third is,
well, we'll work that out as well, somehow.
A third? Could she be Berylaine? Oh, blood and ashes.
Somehow, Min said bleakly.
Meanwhile, you and I are caught here in a leg trap. I know there's another. I know I can't do anything about it, but I had enough trouble reconciling myself to you. And Kyrian and women aren't all like Moiraine. I saw a Kyrian and noblewoman in Baerlon once. On the surface, she made Moiraine look like Lyanna, but sometimes she said things. Hinting. And her auras. I don't think a man in the whole town was safe alone with her. Not unless he was ugly, lame, and better yet, dead.
Elaine sniffed, but she managed to make her voice light.
Never you mind about that. We have another sister, you and I, one you've never met.
Avienda is keeping a close eye on Rand, and he doesn't go 10 steps without a guard of Aiel maidens of the spear.
A Kyrianan woman? At least she had met Berylaine, knew something of her.
No, she was not going to fret over it like some brainless girl. A grown woman dealt with the world as it was and made the best of it. Who could it be?
They had come out into an open yard dotted with cold ashes. Huge kettles, most pitted where rust had been scrubbed away, stood against the encircling stone wall, which had been toppled in several places by trees growing up in it.
Despite the shadows crossing the yard, two steaming kettles still sat on flames, and three novices, hair sweat-soaked and white skirts tied up, were hard at work on scrub boards stuck into broad washpots full of soapy water. With a glance at the shirts under Min's arm, Elaine embraced Sayadar.
"Let me help you with those."
Channeling to do assigned chores was forbidden. Physical labor built character, so they said. But this could not be counted the same. If she swirled the shirts around in the water violently enough, there should be no reason to get their hands wet. "Tell me everything. Are Swan and Liana as changed as they seem? How did you get here? Is Loghain really here? And why are you laundering some man's shirts? Everything." Min laughed, plainly pleased to change the subject. "Everything will take a week, but I'll try. First I helped Swan and Liana get out of the dungeon Elida had stuck them in, and then..." Making appropriate sounds of amazement, Elaine channeled air to lift one of the boiling kettles clear of its flames. She hardly noticed the novice's incredulous stares. She was used to her own strength now, and it rarely occurred to her that she did things without thinking, that some full Aes Sedai could not do at all. Who was the third woman? Avienda had better be keeping a close eye on him.